Talk Radio, broadcasting live from beautiful Trout Lake, Washington, otherwise known as UFO and Paranormal Central. We're going to have a great show tonight. We've got Michael Luckman on. He's an author of Alien Rock and had quite an interesting life. Rather than read all of it, I'd rather just talk about it. So let's introduce Michael Luckman and see if we can get him on the show. Are you there, Michael?
Yes, I am, James. Good to be with you.
Great. I'm glad to get you on the show. It's a little short notice, but well, I'll definitely have you on again real soon. I understand that you've written, you know, the book concerning all the rock stars. Is there movie stars as well? Probably just focusing on rock stars.
Oh, well, actually, it's rock stars. I mean, movie stars, that would be another book. there are some. They're not as well-known as some of the rock stars. At least now, in the wake of my book, the book deals with the major rock icons, an amazing number of the central figures in rock and roll, from Elvis to the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Jerry Garcia, as well as Jimi Hendrix and David Bowie, have all been immersed in this subject to a startling degree, really.
Yeah, it's too bad Tom Mark's still with us. We could have him up here at the ranch.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I've been excited about what I've been reading about and hearing about your UFO activity over at the ranch. As you know, I've been involved with an attempt to set up a series of concerts, really a concert tour called the Signal of Space Concerts. The idea of that simply is to attempt to make contact with extraterrestrials using live music and beaming it out to various targets in our solar system and even beyond to try to make contact, and using some very sophisticated laser beams and other equipment. And that's a very, very large project financially. It takes a huge amount of money to do. And so we've been at that, my partners and I, now for the last few years. My partners haven't been centrally involved with the Woodstock festivals, both the original one and the subsequent ones. But these days, to raise the kind of dough that you need is very, very rough. But we're still at it, and there have been a really surprising number of corporate sponsors that have expressed interest in this over the last year or even in the last several months. But to put it all together is a rough one, and we're hopeful still that we're going to be able to pull it off. It may be a year from now, it may be even a year and a half or 2 years from now, but I think it will happen. And what interested me about your ranch, of course, is that here is a place that apparently there's UFO activity on a regular basis year-round, and that makes it a little bit simpler in the sense that if we could bring musicians to the ranch, we could do the same thing, perhaps on a somewhat smaller scale, because the Signal Space Concerts are planned to be each one of them the size of Woodstock or larger. I mean, maybe anywhere in the vicinity of 500,000 people on up. Whereas I'm thinking that maybe we could put something together, that might involve, a couple thousand people or something along those lines, where we could begin to, put out the message that this is a creative way to attempt to make contact.
Now, was James Taylor one of the people that you've written about?
James is new to me. Somebody mentioned James to me. That was new to me. But the the number of people who were named in the book, an extraordinary number of people who have had UFO experiences, and they're all, you know, very, very well-known names. They not only include, as I said, started the show with mentioning Hendrix and Bowie and all those people, John Lennon and Mick Jagger and people like that, but also there are a whole bunch of other ones who have had even what they consider to be bona fide alien abduction experiences or contact experiences, as you will. So there's no really no end to the involvement by rock stars, and there's also the idea for the Signal of Space concerts came out of my research for the book, but also there was a factor that I was aware that there had been UFOs that were seen, for example, at the Altamont concert out in California. When the Rolling Stones were on stage, as a matter of fact, and that was filmed. Also at the Woodstock Festival, Richie Havens, mm-hmm. one of the seminal figures in Woodstock, told me that he had seen all kinds of unusual lights in the sky when he's camping out there, and of course that's not that far away from the same area, nearby area anyway, Pine Bush in upstate New York, which is also similar to what's going on at your ranch, a place where there's a lot of UFO activity on a regular basis. Mention some of the performers involved here, there are people, for example, like Cat Stevens, who had an abduction experience, Ace Frehley, formerly of Kiss, Nina Hagen, Dave Davies of the Kinks, Jerry Garcia had an amazing experience, and on and on. So there definitely seems to be a direct link between rock and roll music and extraterrestrials or UFOs or aliens or whatever you want to call them, and this has been going on. What's very interesting is how Elvis got involved with this. I mean, if you have to pick, of course, one person who's the kind of the father of the whole thing, it would have to be Elvis. And Elvis had experiences when he was a kid, where when he was maybe about 8 years old or 7 years old, he was approached by two. He had an experience where he saw two beings of light that showed themselves to him, and it showed him what his life would be like in the future. He went on to in a career that he had many UFO sightings. Was a very big UFO believer. Some of those sightings were witnessed. In fact, most of them were witnessed by other individuals in his party, and there's even, and this is quite stunning, reports that UFOs had been seen over Graceland, over the meditation garden in Graceland, where he is buried in more recent years. So there's an extraordinary connection with Elvis, and not just his belief, but actual experiences that he had. And the most important thing of all regarding Elvis and the whole rock and roll scenario with extraterrestrials is at the time of his birth, at the exact moment of his birth, according to Vernon Presley, Elvis's father, there was a strange blue light that was seen over his the small two-room shack that they lived in Tupelo, Mississippi, at the exact moment that he's being born. And this I refer to in my book, Alien Rock, The Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Connection, as the rock and roll's own Star of Bethlehem.
Yeah, you know, there. It seems like whoever is pulling from creation or pulling on that creative flow or that energy seem to have all kinds of other phenomenon around them, you know, their artistic expression or where they're pulling this
yes. Yeah, there's a whole chapter in my book that I deal with, but the book, incidentally, is published by Pocket Books and in conjunction with VH1. The book talks, there's a whole chapter, there's something that I call extraterrestrial musical forces, or EMF. That's my name for this phenomenon, where a lot of rock stars are including the Beatles and many other recognizable names, members of the Rolling Stones and Michael Jackson, all kinds of people, have had these experiences in writing where they have felt that the music is being given to them and that they're just, writing it down. That they're channeling the music. Yoko Ono referred to the Beatles, the writing process of the music, of the delivery of the music, that they're basically just channeling the music that's coming from some other source, presumably extraterrestrial. So, you know, over and over again, there's been this phenomenon, including all the way up to this extreme, that on stage there have been actually groups, the rock groups, let's say they'll have 6 members or 8 members on stage, and there'll be music being produced on stage that they have no idea where that music is coming from. It's not coming from them.
That's awesome. You know, we had an event here that was quite interesting. I cannot remember his name, but it's I think it's Bob Marley's kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's very good. I saw him on one of the late-night shows recently. I don't remember his first name either. Yeah.
Yeah, and now they did a concert here in the Gorge.
Uh-huh.
And the people that were putting on the concert, I told them, I said, you know, if we can bring a ship in to the concert, will you announce it? And will you go ahead and announce it? Everybody look up. There's a ship hovering right over your head, you know?
Right.
And so he goes, I will. I go, you promise, you'll announce it. And he goes, I will. And so I went into a deep meditation, and I put it out, and I said, here's a golden opportunity for, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people at this big, you know, rock concert to see a ship, you know, and to make yourself known.
Right.
And they did. They dropped a ship down. It sat there and bounced over the group for a little bit, and then it just took off, and it was there for probably, you know, 5 or 10 minutes or so.
James, what did it look like?
It was just a white ball of light, of just mm-hmm. pure energy. Mm-hmm. And it dropped down, and it just sat there, and it bounced. When it came mm-hmm. down, it just fell straight down, and it sat there and bounced for mm-hmm. a second, and then just sat there, and it was hovering right over the group. And
wow.
It was pure whitish-blue light.
Well, that's cool. That's really cool.
And it sat there for quite some time.
Yeah.
And then it took off, and mm-hmm. just took off. And the guy, it was there. I mean, the guy had a couple opportunities to announce it, and he never did.
And he never did. Did he see it?
Oh yeah, he saw it. But
he did see it.
He just couldn't do it. You know, I think
probably stunned by it or something. Or
yeah, I think he was stunned by it, and at the same time, I think that he was worried about what maybe other people might think of him too, and that many.
Did anybody get pictures of that?
You know, I didn't hear anything. I tried to find out, you know, if they were filming the event and all the cameras were turned on stage, but being that nobody announced it, I mm-hmm. guess they mm-hmm. nobody.
Oh, that's very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. Well, it fits in with what my research has been showing. I mean, there have been UFOs seen at concerts in various countries all over the world. You know, it doesn't happen. I wouldn't say it happens often, but it has happened in some of the key concerts. And
one in
Russia, that says something.
There was a Russian singer.
Yeah.
It was all over the internet, and she was singing.
Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, and then it kind of broke up her concert a little bit because everybody's turned around and were watching the stage.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, also when the filming of the Rainbow Bridge film, which was a concert film that Jimi Hendrix did, there was a UFO that was seen. Unfortunately, it was seen before the cameras were set up, but it was seen over a crater, and Jimmy walked out onto the on the grounds and put his arms out and said, "Welcome, Space Brothers." Jimmy was like really, really into this.
Yeah, you know, that's awesome. I guess Dan Aykroyd would fit into that category with the Blue
Brothers. Well, Dan certainly does. I'll tell you, Dan is, from what, you know, of all of the people, Dan has been very supportive of my book. Of all of the people in show business, in the entertainment world, he has been by far the most outspoken about the subject of extraterrestrials visiting Earth. He's put out two or three DVDs, even recently, The best one is called Dan Aykroyd, Unplugged on UFOs. He is a real activist. I mean, I'll never forget the time that he went on to the David Letterman show, which is as mainstream as you can get for a late-night show. And he was there to plug some movie. I forget which movie it was that he was in at the time. This is a number of years ago. And he was carrying a little black bag with him, and he took a book out of the little black bag and planted it squarely on Letterman's desk, strategically aimed toward the camera so that they couldn't avoid it. And Dave says, what is this, Dan? What is this? And he said, well, this is a book written by my friend Timothy Good. It's called Above Top Secret, about the worldwide UFO cover-up. And needless to say, Letterman, who's not at all a fan of UFOs, tried to just, you know, get rid of the subject as fast as he could. And he said, you don't want this, Dan. I'll just throw this book away. And Dan said, no, this is real. This is the real thing. This book is full of reports of everyone from astronauts to Air Force people and others who had these pilots and stuff who had these experiences. So he got so carried away with it, Aykroyd did, that he almost forgot to plug his own movie. So he's like really been dedicated to this, and he's been interested in what we're doing, and we're very much into what he's doing.
Yeah, he's given us some great plugs on interviews, and he said, I've got to get out to Gillen Ranch. I just love what you're doing out there.
Yeah. You know, he certainly would want to do that. He would certainly want to do that. In fact, there's a guy that he works with by the name of David Cereda. He's the guy who produced the Dan Aykroyd live Unplugged on UFOs, which came out this past year. And he also, David has a new one that both Dan and I are in called From Here to Andromeda, which is going to be coming out in April. And, this is just right up his alley, just perfect for him.
Yeah, we have some slam dunk evidence here. And what's interesting is, I don't know why, but there's some kind of block as far as getting that, getting it out. And even to connect with Dan Aykroyd as well, but...
Well, what kind of, I know that you've had a fair amount of coverage, including some TV coverage. Have they been giving you a fair shake in the way that they cover it?
Locally they've given me, ABC came out and they did an incredible job on it. And they actually did the research and they looked at all the famous scientists that have investigated out here and the evidence and the reports and everything. So then they brought a debunker on, which is on the planetarium scientist there, James Thomas.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I see nothing fancy here. This is just merely the space shuttle, what they're saying. And,
right.
These things are landing on the mountain. They're morphing from one to three to four ships, taking off again. Jets are chasing them.
Yeah.
And, I just don't see space shuttles, landing, morphing into three or four objects, coming back to
then
taking off again.
The ultimate evidence, short, of course, you have, in a way, the ultimate evidence from what I've read and what I've heard. Something that is pretty much something that you can't explain away at all. There are over 100 individuals, maybe closer to 200 at this point. I know who Stephen Greer is, from CSETI, an organization that deals with this, and he's very proactive. His biggest achievement was he's gotten videotape depositions out of about at least 100, and I have a copy, a full set of this, and it's available through him, former military people whose name, rank, and serial number is given on the tapes, in which they're talking about their knowledge of UFO activity, paper trails, and government cover-up. Some of these people were in Washington at a news conference that was held about a year and a half ago, and it did get some coverage by both CNN and Fox News Channel, but it was kind of brief and never followed up. But it didn't get a fraction of the coverage that it deserved, of course, because it was so heavy in the import of what they were saying and who they really represented. I mean, it was really incredible that Greer was able to come up with this number of individuals. And like my book, even my book has gotten a lot of worldwide publicity. However, having said that, it has not gotten. I happen to be in the public relations business as well, and I would have bet my life that my book would have received all kinds of phenomenal reviews and coverage, and then I would have been on the late night shows and almost automatically, and such and such. Did not happen. Did not happen at all. And the publisher had sent out they were very enthused in the beginning. They sent out maybe 700 copies for reviews. I don't think the book received more than maybe 15, 20 reviews out of all of that, if it received that many. So the fact that I've got, and for the first time, pretty much the story is being told about the key rock and roll icons all being involved, not just believing in UFOs, but of actually having had experiences and some pretty intense experiences, like Jerry Garcia coming face to face with alien beings, that this would have received an extraordinary amount of coverage if the subject was anything else but UFOs. But since it's UFOs, there's this automatic, as you know, this automatic mindset on the part of many media people, and it's somewhat politically motivated to stay away from it, downplay it, not to get too involved.
You know, I think it goes much deeper than that, mainly because you really think about it. What do these beings have to offer? They've already transcended disease. You know, there goes the pharmaceutical companies. You know, they don't burn oil. You know, they goes the oil companies.
Right.
And you know, the big boys that are running things here. You know, they don't believe in war. You know, they could probably bring peace to this if we just open our eyes and listen.
Right.
So really, they're a threat to the big three. You know, corporations that are running.
Yeah. No, they are.
They are.
In media. Yep. Yeah, I know, and that's the big thing. So as you and I both see it, I believe is that hopefully we can transcend all that as far as the media adversity to this and those types of things and instead to just go past them, just do it ourselves without their okay.
We had a one of the reporters that came here, and he did a great job, did a really good job. And they air it here locally, and it starts to go national, and it's squashed immediately. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But he disappeared. I don't know where the guy went. And I called the studio, and they're saying the guy never worked there.
Well, that's what station was this, or what show was this?
It was one of the ABC guys. It was one of the local stations here. And I don't know what is going on because...
Well, that's very strange. That is a very strange story. I'll tell you.
That, yeah, but he's gone. I mean, the guy's not...
Okay. Yeah, no, this fits in with what we've half seriously called the UFO curse. There have been so many shows through the years in New York City area anyway, where they've taken on a reporter or a producer or whoever has taken on or host of a show has taken on this subject, and then the next thing you know, 2 weeks later, they're fired or they disappear. They don't disappear, actually. In the case here in New York, they're just, fired or the show's off the air or something along those lines.
Jay Leno came up here, and he sent a group up here his group came up, and they... film some, and I gave him footage that is just a mind blower. You know, that of two huge ships coming in, and they powered up right over us, right on cue. And then, we have 60 people on the ground. The ship comes in, and it just lights the whole field up, and just amazing. And hear everybody screaming and cheering in the background.
Do you have any of this footage?
Oh yeah. Actually, I gave it all to him. I gave him just this phenomenal footage.
Right.
And while they were there, they filmed two ships coming right at each other and then taking off, making right angle turns.
Right.
And they got it on their own camera and their own, and so they got to see, the ships as well.
Was it just like a producer cameraman with them, or
They had the whole setup. They had producers, cameramen. They had a big crew, and then.
But Leno himself wasn't there.
No, he wasn't there. He sent Green. What's his name?
Tom Green.
Yeah, he sent.
Oh Green. My God! You know something? Let me tell you something. You're lucky that they didn't air it. Tom Green is very, very, very negative. I mean, I saw Tom Green in Roswell. I mean, his whole thing is just to make fun. And it sounds to me like what they saw was too good, and it would be kind of hard to make fun of. So maybe that's why.
Well, you know, they went away from here changed. I mean, it really shocked them, and they had a big reality check because the consciousness and energy here.
Yeah.
And I think it was kind of a shock, but, you know, just that footage alone, if they would have shown it and let people have a choice to decide.
Let the footage
speak for itself.
Sure. Well, again, you know, they're not in the business of revealing UFOs to be true. They're in the business of making fun and, you know,
even if they tried to make fun of this, the footage alone would, they did. I mean, he was making cracks and everything else. And, you know, we just allowed him to make the cracks and went along with it.
Yeah.
And then we put our 2 cents in, you know.
How long ago was this?
I believe it was last summer when they were out here. So
Right. So, well, who knows? Maybe they'll still do it. But, you know, as I say, Tom Green is, like, notoriously against this, as is Letterman. I'll tell you a little story about Letterman. A friend of mine by the name of John Sheldon, who is an artist, and he specializes in aliens. And at that time, which goes back now a long time ago, maybe about 15 years ago at least, maybe even longer, when Letterman was just starting out with a local show here in New York before he got his big syndicated show, he invited him to come into the office, Letterman did, and personally interviewed him, like a pre-interview to get him onto the show. And as an alien sculptor, somebody who specializes in making sculptures of extraterrestrials, And my friend John told him that you know, there's only one condition that I have of whether or not I'll go on the show, and that is you have to agree that there will not be, that you're not going to poke fun at this stuff. And he Letterman could not believe it. He said that's all I do is make jokes and poke fun. And he was so perplexed. Letterman was so perplexed that he was screaming out loud to his staff people, "He won't go on the David Letterman show. He won't go on the David Letterman show." He was really upset. But you know, my guy stuck to his stuck to his guns. He wasn't going to do it if he put him in that kind of position.
Yeah, that's good. There's we've seen here pretty much. I mean, we've had Fox News, Discovery Channel, History Channel. Everything has come out here, and they've been pretty good. And a lot of the Discovery Channel specials that, you know, UFOs in the Bible and Then and Now and all that.
Oh, yeah, they do some great stuff.
Yeah, and I'm actually in those, and they used my footage all throughout the show, but it acted like it was somebody else's or gave it credit to somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I really don't mind. I mean, as long as information gets out there, I just want to get it out there.
Yeah.
And we've given it away. I mean, I've given all my footage away. Whoever wants it, that can get it out there and let people know about it.
What's the most number of people that you've had out there actually at one time?
About 400.
Uh-huh. Right, on these these like annual conferences that you have?
Yeah, we had about 400 people here, and we had two massive ships come in. One came in from the north and one came in from the south, and they greeted each other, and they're brilliant, kind of a greenish blue.
Right.
And then I don't know how many other ships came during that. We have got photos of metallic ships hovering over the field as well.
Wow.
During that conference. And so,
yeah.
I mean, and almost we had, I think we had 15 speakers. Almost every one of them had a PhD.
Uh-huh.
And they had not only their own sightings, but some were contacted and actually had an exchange of energy that just turned them upside down in a really good way, you know. So, I mean, it was pretty amazing. But you know, this is ongoing. It just keeps going on and on.
How
and
many
on
years have you had this ranch?
20 years.
20 years. And how long has this been going on? Has it been going on all that length of time?
With me ever since I was a kid, but up here about the first 5 years, because I was building a spiritual retreat center.
Yeah.
I didn't really care about UFOs. It wasn't even, I just accepted it. You know, it's a big universe out there. It's got to be
right.
smarter than us. We don't consider it anyway. We're treating each other and the planet.
Right.
But I was doing some intense spiritual practice here and a lot of intersensitivity training and self-mastery courses and process-oriented therapies and things like that. And in my meditations, I started getting communications along with the ship appearing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And with many, many witnesses. And that's been ongoing for 15 years, despite some of the armchair skeptics, you know, who have been making all kinds of statements on the negative side of it. But, you know, I tell them, you know, what Einstein said, condemnation, you know, without investigation is the height of ignorance. So you can't really make an intelligent statement until you come out here and see for yourself. And
Have your contacts been telepathic? Is that basically the communication that you had?
It's covered the whole spectrum. It's been face-to-face, telepathic. And I've seen the ships. I know what the interior looks like, the whole enchilada. But right now, it's pretty much telepathic with the ships showing themselves, you know, mm-hmm. so other people can see as well.
You say you see the inside of a ship, too?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been on the ship, so I know what they're all about.
Mm-hmm.
you know,
I was just curious what that was like, what that looks like.
Not much in them. The smaller ships that when they come down here, they're very very clean on the inside. There's hardly anything to them.
Right.
They've got windows that are they look metallic, but they're not. They're like screens, and they can see anywhere, you know, on the planet or some other universe. It's amazing the technology they have.
Intelligent. Did these type of experiences coincide with any kind of missing time or anything along those lines?
Oh, yeah.
It did.
Yeah, missing time and bi-location, everything. I mean, we were bi-locating trucks and vehicles and losing hours and hours of, 10 hours of road time and ending up where we were supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. It happens a lot.
And I have physicists that were with me. One in particular has 9 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And he was with me once, and we bi-located a truck. We made it from L.A. to Eugene, Oregon, in about 6.5 hours, which is impossible.
Yeah. I'd read something, I believe, on your website having to do with, what was it now? There was a lot of stuff on your website that intrigued me. Well, for one thing, you were talking about seeing some female figure. I don't recall exactly what that was.
There's three or four that I've been working with, and the majority of them are female, which is amazing. And they explained to me why. They said because your defenses don't come up when you see a beautiful female, you know, appear to you versus some buffed out male, you know, appearing with all this light around him. You know, it's kind of spooky to some people.
Right.
But most of them, Blagi is a Pleiadian one that I've had a lot of conches, the main one. And then there's one named Malia that's from, they call it the Orion Council of Light. And then there's another one named Bagi, which is she's like a humanoid feline. Very, very beautiful being, but they're feline in nature and they're bipedal. And those are the three main contacts I've had. But I mean, I've seen everything from little small guys in robes, you know, to, you know, blue-skinned beings to really tall beings. We're having so many contacts, or even robotic things have appeared in the field that are all this energy fields around them, and they're in a suit, like a robotic type suit.
Right. What is the most graphic photograph or video or film footage that you have that anybody's taken at or around your ranch?
You know, the one, there's two of them that come to mind that I like the most, actually three of them. One is Blagee's ship when it comes in, and it's pink, like a pulsating pink energy in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's blue on the sides and turquoise on the top and bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the rotating fields.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like this giant, like a Tesla ball or something up there. It's just amazing. And
Right. When
scientists look at this, they go, that's the most astounding pie plate I've ever seen, you know.
Wow.
They cannot explain that one away because you see the energy fields. And there's multiple witnesses there. And she told us exactly when she was going to come in, and we had the cameras rolling and ready, so that, you know, constitutes contact.
Has anybody ever had any, I know this is tough, but anybody ever captured on film or of any kind or video, any kind of an image of a being?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. We have beings, ultra-dimensional beings, stepping out of plasma fields. And I have one, I really like it. And its head is definitely not Earth human, you might say. The head is shaped totally different.
Mm-hmm.
They're very large beings, and they wear brown robes. And if you couldn't sense their energy, they'd kind of scare you. But they're very, very ancient beings, extremely wise, very loving. But they don't look like we do. They look,
is this an image that the average person would be able to discern what you're saying, or is
it's on the website, and I brought it up on the Art Bell show as well.
Oh, okay.
So it's an pretty undeniable image when you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the plasma fields are generating, these beings are walking right out of the mist, and you can see a pretty good definition of their face and the robes and everything.
I was intrigued by one photo, you may have more than one, of these... I guess you refer to them as plasma tube. It was basically a scene that showed a bunch of people gathered on the ground, and you saw throughout the ground these I don't know what you call them. I guess, for lack of a better term, plasma. But there were these
orbs of the
light. Yeah, exactly, the orb type thing. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I have a huge one coming right out of my chest, where I'm standing next to Standing Elk, and we're having a little heart-to-heart discussion. You can see this giant orb half in and half out of my, right over my heart chakra.
That's on your website?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's on the website. But, you know, we have the orbs here come in every size, shape, and color, and we've been blowing them up and actually seeing faces in them. So some of the big golden orbs, they have, like, Merlin faces in them. It's really interesting, like wise masters, and then some of the
where do you want to? I mean, you have all this phenomenal activity happening all around you, and I was curious because I remember there was something on your website about the preparation, let's say, for any kind of an actual landing situation.
Mm-hmm.
That had to do with. If you could just give me some idea of what that was based on. As I recall, it had something to do with whether people would be, you know, whether... I think you referred to it as a stand-down or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, the only reason they're not landing and interfacing with this and working with this is because every ship that appears here, we have military craft on it in minutes. Like, within 2 to 5 minutes, there's a jet right on it. You know, it's amazing. But
you're saying in the majority of cases that there's that you see UFOs that there's a military craft.
Oh, they're here. They're
I mean,
constantly.
I saw a couple of photos showing that, but I didn't know that it was. You're saying in almost all of the cases or many of the cases.
It's amazing. It's constant. I mean, they're on it. They're like right on it. You know, and they'd have to be in the air. I don't know. They couldn't scramble that fast. They have to already be in the air and be watching this. And we see a pattern constantly of these jets going around in a circle around the valley here,
right.
Constant. And
even when there are no UFOs.
Yeah, even when there are no UFOs,
okay.
It's constant. And
interesting.
You know, I said, okay, look, here's the UFO. Watch, this jet is going to vector right in on it, right where it was. I said, you know, that jet has 360 directions it can be going, and you watch, it'll go right to where that UFO is. Sure enough, every time, it goes
mm-hmm.
right to where the UFO was last seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And usually on an interception pattern, you know, like right perfect where it was traveling, they're like right on an interception course.
Right. But then inevitably, I suppose, the UFO disappears and it just
yeah,
left.
I was out there once when Bajie's ship was there and a jet vectored in on it and came right at it just screaming. And I have photographs and video of the jet
uh-huh.
coming right over treetop level over this house.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
they're black. They have no markings on them at all. And
mm-hmm.
we have photo, you know, video of the black helicopters with no markings, everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, this jet vectored in on her ship, and she was sitting there, and I was having a telepathic conversation with her, and I said, well, you know, they do have some toys. You know, they've been back engineering things. And I said, can they harm you in any way? And she said, no. She said, no,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing they can do. And she gave
mm-hmm.
me a demonstration, and the jet came right on her, and then she just disappeared, and it went by.
Right.
And then she reappeared right behind it.
Wow.
She flew right up its tailpipe, and then she disassociated the ship into this all these fingers of light.
Uh-huh.
Went over the jet, and then just disappeared and kept going.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and I would give anything to get testimony from that pilot, you know. To
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What have you experienced?
Besides the Bob Marley's kid performing there, have you had any other, you know, music of any size?
I just finished a 40 by 80 building that we've been doing the conferences in, and that was quite a chore because, you know, basically I'm the funder here, you know, this whole
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
And there's been literally no funding. There's been a little bit here and there, but
right.
hardly, you know, nothing to speak of. But as far as having music here, we've had, I mean, I love music. I want to incorporate more of it. But we did have a group here that was playing real exotic music and a lot of drums and
uh-huh.
and synthesizer, and they were doing the, you know, the thing from Contact, you know, that...
Oh, yeah.
That it was pretty... What was it? What was that movie? I can't remember. Not Contact, but
Close Encounters.
Yeah, Close Encounters.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, you know, they're playing that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
All that stuff, just messing around in the ship.
Right.
Man. So it was pretty funny, but they definitely do respond to music. And some of our best sightings are when we have a campfire and we're just playing flutes and drums and just having
uh-huh.
fun.
Uh-huh.
That's when the best sightings come in because you have a real cohesive group
mm-hmm.
with the intent, and you have a shared mindset and a cohesive group with the right intent.
Yes.
What it takes to draw these in, which
yes.
you probably could do with large groups if you
yeah.
handle the energy right.
Have you ever considered what you would do if you actually had that once-in-a-lifetime situation where there was a landing? That is a solid landing, an open landing. You know what you would say, and more importantly, what you would do in a circumstance like that.
Yeah, I'd say get me out of here. I'd be on
yeah.
the ship in a moment.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah, I already had that experience, but
yeah.
My whole thing is. Okay, these beings are, some of them are thousands, if not millions, billions of years ahead of us.
Yes.
You know, they've transcended disease, they've cleaned up their environment, they have
yeah.
wisdom beyond anything. They know more about creation and the Creator than we would ever know. And all of those things, I think the key is to make that available to humanity so we can, you know, transcend disease and we can
yeah.
clean up our environment and that's my whole focus here is making that information available. And, you know, it has been made available to certain physicists that I work with that have mm. created phenomenal technologies, both for fuel-less energy and counter-gravity as well as
right.
healing technologies. And so my dream was to get some people together to fund this to where we can have this on-site and create, you know, the ultimate healing center, and as well as having the other fuel-less technologies that are earth-friendly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Disseminate those and start cleaning up the environment.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of I'm sure you're aware of of Zechariah Sitchin's research.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just wondering how you, you know, whether you feel, where you think that fits in with all of this.
You know, it fits in really well because it's the same information we've been given, but it's only part of the puzzle because it goes back almost 28 million years as far as the Earth being colonized and beings coming and going. And
we
had the cataclysms and everybody had to start over again. So, you know, it's part of the puzzle, but the puzzle is much, much bigger than that.
What significance do you give to the year 2012, and how do you see that fitting in, if it does, with what's going on?
My gut feeling is things are happening quicker, much faster than that, and, you know, there's really no telling where we are because we keep using the Julian calendar in reference to the Mayan calendar, and it's, you know, there's so many different mindsets on that. And,
yeah.
You know, there's 4 years where I think Mark Anthony didn't become Caesar, so you got a 4 year missing gap there.
Right.
And then they're saying Jesus was born in 5 BC or 4 BC. So actually, there's all this information out there showing that Gregorian calendar is really not very accurate, and we can't really put that according to the Mayan calendar. So.
Yeah.
We really need to go down there and talk to the Mayans and say, hey, what's up? You know,
right.
Find the Mayan elders and ask them where we are, you know, in this progression. But I definitely see a huge shift of energy coming in, and the collective consciousness grid is being, you know, the old one's being torn down, and there's a whole new one taking its place. And we're definitely on a ride through some incredible changes.
Yeah. Have you ever had any Native Americans, Native American Indians out there? Because I know that isn't there a tribe that's out in that area that's had a lot of experiences with UFOs?
We've had a lot of Dakota and Sioux elders come out here. I had a Cherokee elder come out here. We've done a lot of ceremony, a lot of sweat lodges and different ceremonies. So we actually did a snake dance out here, which was great. And I had one gathering here. Actually, I just made the ranch available to him, but it was a Heart of the Heart gathering, which was almost all Native American elders and different people talking from around the world.
Right.
And, you know, Mayan elders, everything. So
great.
They love it here. The problem is getting rid of them. They want to stay here.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
And I can't afford to feed everybody, so...
Yeah, right,
good.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you got a fantastic thing going out there, going on there. You know, I'd like to see what we could do to interface. The last thing that my partner told me just yesterday was that at first felt that, you know, since we've been talking to these sponsors anyway, that perhaps we could get them to... somebody to shake loose and to put some money into a project you know, do something out there, even hopefully as soon as the June 24th Kenneth Arnold 60th anniversary date. I don't know whether that's going to be possible or not. So I suppose what we're left with, at least in that time frame, would be perhaps getting some, you know, individual musicians. The musicians, there are all kinds of people, but, you know, but there's always problems of not only of expenses, but also, particularly with musicians, with their better-known ones, anyway, their schedules. You know, I mean, we are in touch with all kinds of people. I mean, I know that, for example, that Ace Frehley, formerly of KISS, would be very, very much into this. I think that pretty sure that Steve Tyler would too, from Aerosmith. You know, he's a huge name, but of course he's, you know, he's had some physical problems lately, and then he's with his throat, and he's and the schedule's like crazy mad, and you know, like that. But anyway, at some point, Blondie, Deborah Harry of Blondie is pretty strongly into this stuff. And lots of other people, Joe Satriani, all kinds of people, but it's also it really depends. I mean, to get them to get something going that soon, which is not a lot of time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, you know, what we can do in that time frame, but I'd love to see something if possible, and if not, by then, at least as soon as possible, you know.
Yeah, maybe in August or something like that.
Yeah, and I was just thinking maybe in the summer or something like that.
In August,
yeah.
We can just do a big outdoor concert.
Yeah. I'm very, you know, it's like, you know, what would help, of course, is if there was an exceptional amount of interest in my book on the part of some major television outlets, cable television, particularly in the beginning. HBO was very interested in the possibility of doing a made-for-TV movie based on a big, big project, maybe a $20 million project. There was interest on the part of the Sci-Fi Channel. There was interest on the part of Fox Television. Serious interest. The head of reality television for Fox sat with it for 3 weeks considering it, and then ultimately passed. They didn't give a reason, but there was interest in it. So we've come close, but no cigar yet. We're still working on that one. You know. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's so many different ways to do it, but you know, I found out when people find out what's going on here and they just know about it, they'll open the schedule up. It's because they want to see it. They want to have their own experience here. So
sure.
Besides what some of these stars would do when they found out about this.
Well, one of my projects is to get a television, you know, either a film or either a feature film or which would be most likely in the form of a documentary about it, including reenactments of some of the of Elvis's experiences and Hendrix and this one and that one. Either television or for film. So that, under those circumstances, you know, we might be able to set up a concert, you know, on your ranch and then film it, and that would be part of the whole operation.
You make it as a benefit or something, too, you know.
Yeah, that's a possibility, too.
Jump into it.
We're very, we also have, some of the people, by the way, who've been, like, really into the book have been, there are a number of celebrities, quite a few, including Prince William's been reading the book, Bono's been into it, to some degree Spielberg, and some others. I'm very, I'm close friends with Pete Bennett, who was the legendary manager, the original manager, not the manager, but at one point when Brian Epstein died, he became the manager for the Beatles, and then when the Beatles broke up, he was manager individually for each one of them, and he's a good friend, and he's into this stuff, and for example, he knows, not as a manager, but he works closely with Mick Jagger, and he works with the Stones and Aerosmith, and so at the right time, under the right circumstances, I can't, you know, bother him for something small, but if everything, you know, the right set of circumstances, I can get him to get on the phone and to make the right phone calls to the right people. I mean, he could get, you know, Ringo knows about my book. He's in my book. Paul McCartney would be somebody who we can get on the phone. So, you know, I mean, what we like to do is basically it comes down to like a UFO Woodstock, regardless of what it might be called, you know, and whether it's for a few thousand people or whether it's the size of Woodstock, whether it's at your ranch or in Berlin or Tokyo or upstate New York or wherever we might hold it. I'm sure once it starts, it'll continue.
Yeah.
I just think that the attention, public attention, will be so strong.
Yeah, it's already known internationally, this place, as far as a UFO hotspot. It's been on all the, you know, and it's airing over and over. People in Australia, England, everywhere saying, "Hey, I saw you," you know, sending emails on
the
channel and things like that.
Terrific.
So.
Well, I'd like to work with you in any way I can, you know, and I really appreciate this opportunity to.
Yeah, we'll definitely get together here and see if we can put our heads together. You know, my problem, I'm up here out in the middle of nowhere, and I'm kind of a hermetic, you know, person. I don't know any of these people or even how to contact them. You know, just getting some of them out here to have their own personal, experience. I would totally
Absolutely.
Open the door for them and just say, "Hey, come on out, check it out if you want to get behind it."
Yeah, well, it sounds great. I really like it. I think it's tremendous because, you know, one of the problems is the other hotspot area around here is Pine Bush, New York. And Pine Bush, we haven't come up with just the physical setup there. You know, I understand my partner did say that he knew somebody, some private homeowner or something there, but I don't know that,
yeah.
that the land is anything like what you've got.
Isn't it on a reservation or something?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't believe it is.
Yeah.
But it happens to be, you know, there happens to be a lot of aircraft up there as well. Some amazing things been there's a group of contactees who have often gone up there through the years and had some amazing experiences.
Really, yeah, we're coming up to the end of the hour here, so I'm going to have to let you go, unfortunately. It's been an awesome interview.
Yeah, it's been great. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, so let's stay in touch and, you know, see what we can do, put our heads together.
Definitely. I'll be calling you, and we'll see what we can do, and I'll get you back on the show again real soon.
Thanks, James. Good talking to you.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on. This is James Dillon with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening, and look up. Good night.